Yeah.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Kevin Miller. This is the What Drives You podcast, where we focus on your drive. Your drive is working in some areas of your life, producing great success, yet in other areas, maybe not so much. Let's get clarity on what you value, what motives are helping and hurting you, and get you fully into alignment so you're driving further and faster and enjoying the ride. Most nutrient-dense and beneficial veggies you can eat. Your body's the vehicle for all your drive, so we seek to strengthen it for you in this episode. We live in a culture where many people don't eat veggies, and if you do, we gravitate towards the least beneficial. Well, food is your best medicine, so here is your guide to getting the most out of your veggies. I mean, the goal is to make veggies half or more of every meal, which is so hard, especially in America. It's not the side veggie. It should be the main thing if we want to be well. Meat and grains and those things that we really love really should be the other side, should be the side, not the veggies. But to veggies, not all are created equal. In a recent episode, Dr. James quipped about his kids going for the most sugarful veggies like carrots and snap peas. And it sparked a listener to ask, okay, well, which veggies were in fact better? So we intended to discuss the better foods in five different categories, but we found just getting through veggies was a complete episode. So we'll hit the rest coming up. But to give you some cliff notes, his top tier, Dr. Randy James, medical doctor, functional medicine expert, his top tier picks for the most nutrient-dense veggies were these: broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, spinach, cabbage, especially purple, and kale. Tier two, peas, corn, carrots, and okra. Okay, why? And what about all the others? Well, you'll serve yourself well to understand. So in this episode, that's what we break down. Hey, a quick call out on this note to my new friend, Kathy. She's been a listener for years. She loves these health-focused shows that I do with Dr. Randy James. And this week, she showed up here in his practice at True Life Medicine in Colorado. She flew in to become a patient, and I came out to see someone in the foyer, and she recognized my voice, not really realizing that my studio is actually in his medical practice building. So we had a great visit, a really incredible visit. And if that's of interest to you, you can check out what Randy does at truelifemedicine.com. And you got questions on any of this stuff, hit me up. Email me, kevin@kevinmiller.co. Literally my direct email. All right. Next up, Randy and I give you the lowdown on the best veggies.
I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky, where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Yeah, there's no way to start this thing without addressing the fact that both of our voices are wrecked with some virus that's gone through. But two of my boys had it. John here at the office had it.
I clearly got it from you guys.
You clearly got it from my wife got it. You got it. I apparently win by getting it the worst.
And the longest.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So we have some virus, you know, sneezing, runny nose.
Not COVID.
Got tested there, but got it. So, you know, here I am again, the guy who doesn't get sick, and I'm sick again. Had COVID, and now I've got this, and I've held on to it, and that's humbling and frustrating. But, you know, to that, let's just to speak real quick to it. You know, you and I talked yesterday. If I look at it, I would say I was exercising in, I was overdoing it. Period. Mm-hmm. I literally, prior to getting this, my kids had been sick, so it was around. I did 4 days super hard just because I wanted to for my soul and psyche. And I kind of ran and rode myself into the ground. So I did that, which, you know, exercise, working out hard breaks you down to build up stronger. But in that time period, I would say I had broken myself down further. I was doing sugar and I was worried about some stuff. Great opening.
Yeah, the Swiss cheese holes lined up.
Swiss cheese holes to line up.
Which actually makes it sound more random. Like, who can help it if the Swiss cheese holes line up? But it's not completely random. You had a choice in the matter. You had some awareness. And at the same time, we would never look at you and say, well, it's your utter fault that you as a human being got sick.
Right. So I'm not God. I'm not in control of the sickness and stuff. But if I look at it with the knowledge that I actually do have, I would say, gosh, knowing that my kids got sick, John here in the office was sick, obviously something's going around, this would be a good time to not overdo my exercise, not do sugar, get extra sleep, meditate, and deal with my stress response.
Do an extra day of fast.
Fast. Yeah, absolutely. All those things. I did none of them. So could I have controlled it? Is it all my fault? I do have some, I want to have some power in that.
Right. It gives you power into the future, empowerment into the future to have not zero chance of getting ill, but less chance.
Yeah. We'll never know on this one. I didn't do it, but
Same thing for me, knowing all of that is going along, and probably, I think last show or two shows ago, we talked about starting the ketosis trial in September. And so leading up to that, I was imbibing a little more frequently. And plus it was the last days of kids at home and no school. So they were in oh my gosh, Dad, it's the last week of no school. We have to watch this. We have to eat that. And so we did. And all of that was happening at the same time. And I got it. Thank you, Kevin.
So with that said, there we go. So we're not Supermen. We can't control everything. We're not God. Stuff happens. And here we are.
We did in saying, you know, a prayer before meal, there was the thanking God for illness. And one of the kids was astute enough to ask later, did you really mean that? Like, it's a good thing. I was like, yeah. How else would you know to value well-being? How else would you know, have any consciousness of the mysterious, I'm going to say miracle of well-being, of not feeling dizzy, of not feeling nauseated, of not feeling pain, unless you ever felt a little dizziness, congestion, nausea, pain? And so there is a time and a place to be thankful for that.
I'm just reading Graham Greene, old guy, and old writer, dead I'm sure now, but and he just did a section of one of his characters talking about that. Can there be pleasure without pain? Which those are big words, but even to that point of I'm going to enjoy lunch because right now I'm having the pain of not having eaten since last night.
I feel it, yeah.
Yeah, and if I ate constantly, would I ever really enjoy it? Would I enjoy sushi if I had been eating 5 hours straight? Well, no. So the pleasure, so it is, you know, to your point of I'm not going to pray to get sick, but man, gosh, when I get over this, I won't take my voice for granted as much. Next time. Okay, so on that note, we're going to talk about food. And we had a listener ask about best foods, in essence. Or let's say, you know, because there we get into right, wrong, best. The most life-giving foods. Are some foods more life-giving and supporting than others? Yes or no?
Yes.
Got to say yes.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm going to poke, right before we get into it, I'm going to poke at something that I was thinking about on the way over here. So right next to us, you and I are both looking out my north-facing window here. And they're building four houses, I guess.
Condos.
Yeah, condos or something like that. So they're building those things. So I can go look over there. They got 2x6s. They've got, you know, pretty strong siding on it and yada, yada.
building blocks. Because that's what I was thinking about. Food is our, you know, that's what we're building. That's what our body is living off of. They can go over there and put a solid 2x6 and solid siding, or they can use 1x2s, you know, or whatever, however small you can get, and flimsy particle board. So if we take that into food and say, is this next thing that I am eating, that I'm putting in my mouth, is it solid wood or particle board? Is that fair to a degree?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I'm going to poke holes in it a little bit. Or not, I don't know. Maybe it's not poking holes. But the thing that everybody comes up with is, oh, yeah, but I knew this guy. He's an NFL player right now, man, and the guy lives on Hot Pockets.
Right.
And we can't reconcile those. I lived with a guy, Sean Petty. He was on the U.S. national cycling team. I lived with him for a long time, and the guy was renowned for having won the race across America, the solo race across America. The dude just decided on a whim to do it because it was like a $25,000 purse. He was a top elite cyclist, and he did it with his mom. No support team. His mom was there a little bit, and he would literally go to gas stations and get beanie weenies. That was the joke. He literally did that. He did the majority of the race, just a can of beanie weenies,
hawk
them down and keep going. Never stopped. Won the sucker, won the purse. So he was a garbage dump of food at that point. If he hears this, I'm so sorry. Hopefully he's better now, but I don't think he's argued that he was. And so when I talk about the building blocks, you've always got somebody saying, well, here's somebody at some high performance who's living on beanie weenies.
Right, that shoots a hole in your theory. How can this guy do that?
So reconcile that.
And there's infinite variety of biochemical, of human biochemical individuality.
Okay.
And so, and I would also submit Sean Petty, if he continued to live on beanie weenies, his performance would go down compared to himself if he lived on something different.
Well, the last I was in touch with him, he got hepatitis and it took him out of the sport. Really wrecked his life.
But can we blame hepatitis on beanie weenies?
Well, like my sickness that we talked about, it didn't help.
It didn't help. That's absolutely right. It did not help. And we, one of the themes is Americans, we as a people, as a culture, we don't like this because it's like, oh my gosh. So you're saying that I have to think about this and think about that and think about this if I want to be well? And the answer is yeah.
Okay. Is it fair to say the probability? So if we're talking about probability here, because everybody, do I want to strive to be the exception of somebody who seems to have good health, even though I'm doing everything to violate it?
I don't want
that risk. I'd rather go.
It's a big risk.
That's like saying, okay, would you want to try to have a successful business, but do everything
wrong?
The worst business practices.
Do you want to make it safe home, but do everything wrong?
Yeah.
Drive drunk and go too fast. And
so if you know an exception out there, and for some reason that's your goal, knock yourself out. If you want to go with best business practices, best life practices, we're talking about that here. So if we take the NFL player who's been, or Sean Petty, who wins the race across America with beanie weenies, and say, gosh, there he won high, super high performance, elite level, Olympic level performance on this crap food. Then the question would be, okay, but how long can they sustain it?
Right.
What are they going to look like at 60?
Right. Let's hold out as an example on the other side, Tom Brady.
Okay.
Right. You might not know, I don't know his story very much, but here's a 40 plus year old, you know, even better performing quarterback than he was at 30.
And he's old for the NFL. Is
that, yeah. Okay. And that, it's just unheard of. Right. And he makes a big deal of the things that we talk about, you know, what, and I think he has now an entire business called TB12 or something like that, where he's a consultant for other people who want to be high performing for a longer period of time. Well, how did you do this, Tom Brady? And it wasn't on Hot Pockets. Mm-hmm. And I doubt that there's ever going to be a guy who lives on Hot Pockets and beanie weenies who's at a high, high performing level for a long, long period of time. And he writes a book about the Hot Pocket beanie weenie theory.
Right.
That the propensity for most of us is to spend the time, the money, the effort. And of course, Tom Brady has more of those things that he can spend on this. But we all can too.
I was just going to say, so no matter what, I shouldn't say that. That's not fair. I can't make a blanket statement, no matter what socioeconomic level you're at or whatever. But Tom Brady is probably worth $1 billion. I'm not. We'll just say that. I'm not. I do have the ability, for the most part, to eat at the same level.
And let's also acknowledge that that's nearly for the first time in human history, can you and I, as middle classy kind of people, eat at the level of kings?
Yeah.
Now, 1,000 years ago, the level of kings often meant eat cake. And we have the famous, you know, "we'll let them eat cake" phrase from the French queen. Uh-huh. And the reason that they hated that phrase so much back then was because they couldn't. They ate horrific whatever stuff. And now for the first, we have the building blocks, like we're looking over there. Those guys are building buildings that are going to last for 100 years. And we have that capacity. We have that choice. We have that power. We have the ability to buy those things. It's not irrational that we could make those choices to perform at a level of Tom Brady.
Okay, so let's hit that real quick before we get into literal lists of foods to say, because affordability always gets in there. Yeah. And my understanding from what you and I haven't talked in depth about, but I think it was the movie, was it Supersize Me? It was one of those movies where it went into the real life, kind of like a reality TV thing of a lower income family, their hurried lifestyle, and lack of money. And it was that premise of can't afford good food. And my understanding is that you looked at that and poked holes in that a little bit to say, okay, if you get this bag of, I don't know how much, $5 bag of fast food, and consume that, that if you buy an equal amount, monetary amount, $5 of, I don't know, fresh veggies, it's going to look like less, but the nutrient quantity is going to be as equal or higher in that what looks like lesser food. So which begs the question, can we not afford it, or are we just not equating it? When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is, we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer. Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. YahooFinance.com. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin.
So this is very complex, right? Like, okay, like what you just said, that nowadays there are also, we have to be very fair. There are nutrient deserts,
yeah,
urban areas where within the space of whatever people can drive or walk or ride to is gas stations and Walmarts and dollar stores and things like that, that aren't going to carry nutrients.
Can we say, okay, so what you're saying is there are, let's go into a big city, there are spans of neighborhoods or places where people live, high rises, whatever, where in essence, their access to food is what we would say is what we have in the middle aisles of the grocery store. All the processed, right, shelf-stable food,
okay,
yeah, and they don't have access to what we have access to on the outside of, right, the grocery store, which is produce, meat, fish, dairy, bakery, even, I don't know. Yeah, even that. Is that?
Well, so just let's say nutrients.
Whole food.
Okay. Right? Whole foods and nutrients. Yeah. They have access to food, but what do you call food? And so that there is that. And that is a part of the socioeconomic situation, and that's a problem. And if you look back to the if we go to, and this is not fair, but if we say, okay, normal middle class, whatever, people that would be listening to this, and many people say, I can't afford XYZ, and I would say, well, switch the way you're thinking and look at price per nutrient.
Yes.
You can fill your belly for sure on $5 of Special K cereal. But how much are you paying per nutrient? Because a lot of that is nutrient-less. You get a full belly. You don't die, but you're overfed and undernourished. And again,
and hungry an hour later.
And potentially, yeah, stimulating the strange, wrong metabolism that equals, it might take 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years for the various individuals to then have aberration of your metabolism that equals pathology. So the price per nutrient mind switch, though, is very hard because people like to eat Special K and they have it. They've done this all along. It's part of a habit, all those kind of things. And to switch that over, granted, is tough.
You know what I just thought about? Thanksgiving meal, right? We all think about that. What do we equate with Thanksgiving? Stuffed. Dude, I am stuffed. I mean, you are packed after Thanksgiving dinner. And I've always equated it till this moment with that we overeat. We spend all this time making all this great food, then we sit down and we overeat. And I thought, is that really true? Or is it that we have a culture and X percent of them are eating a high diet of processed, nutrient-lacking foods, and we come together Thanksgiving, and what do? We cook a home cooked meal, turkey and vegetables and, you know, potatoes and stuffing and whatever, but from scratch food. We sit down and for the first time in a long time, maybe we have a full meal of nutrient dense food and we walk away and going, holy smacks. So did we overeat or did we actually just get an influx of abnormal for a lot of America nutrient dense food?
I'm going to have to say, I don't know.
I'm going to go with it. I think there's a possibility there.
There is a possibility there. The differentness of feeling stuffed. I feel like most people are stuffed because they eat stuffing and it's, you're back.
We
to
overeat.
A less calorie dense food. One thing I want to go back to on the price of thinking about food is recognizing what percentage of one's income historically was spent on food.
That's right.
Yeah. I think we talked about that maybe about that. A significant time ago. And so these days people will have a food, but well, how many people don't have a budget anyway? And they won't even know what they're spending on food, but it tends to be a very low percentage of our budget because we shop for bargains and that kind of thing. And again, it just doesn't make much sense to get on sale food. Like it just.
Yeah. When have you ever gone and said, broccoli's on sale? Broccoli is never on sale.
It's because it's, you couldn't
almost bad.
Well, that's right. You couldn't put living whole food on sale because it goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's those kinds of things. So the whole idea of shopping on a budget, and maybe I don't want to comment on coupons, but just shopping on a budget is like that you're shopping for a price, not for quality. And so already there's an inherent problem there. So you have to switch your mindset to say, okay, historically, what percentage of the income have people in the middle class spent? And if you go back to the 1800s, 80, 90% agrarian communities that are growing a lot of their own vegetables, they're growing, you know, so what percentage of their income or even their available time was spent on it? And let's just say 50%, a significant amount. And these days we couldn't even comprehend that. And that's just to survive. And then along comes the Industrial Revolution and all of these things. And so other people harvest your food and other people can it and other people do these things and put it into cheaper process and logistics goes up. So the price of food keeps coming down and down and down. But even after World War II, where now it's way less agrarian, in the 50s and 60s, still the average American middle-class family was spending, do you know what percentage mm-hmm. on their food? Okay, so 1960, Betty Crocker, what would you guess was the average household income percentage spent on food?
25%.
Yeah, that's 20-25%. Imagine that today. That's gargantuan. That's probably, you know, that's approaching your mortgage level and things like that people are spending a lot of money on. And so anyway, so let's jump forward to today. What's the average amount spent today?
Well, my first thought too, though, is to segment that between grocery shopping and food, meaning if you're eating out. Because I know some people who spend an exorbitant amount, but it's because they eat out for every meal. Yep. So take that out of the equation. If we're talking about groceries today, goodness, 10, 15%?
Today it's between 6 and 9.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So if somebody goes up to 10 or 15%, for some people that's a doubling. And you're like, I can't have my XYZ usually entertainment or car or something else, if I do that. And maybe that's true. And I don't want to guilt somebody into giving up their, you know, iPhone or their whatever, but just to have an awareness of the fact that historically we are spending so much less now on feeding our bellies. And so if you then kind of change your paradigm and say, oh, okay, well, gosh, it does make sense if we just say, hey, let's think of a 10%. Like 10% of annual income or monthly income or whatever else is going to go towards food. I would encourage people to say, okay, think down that pathway and then look at price per nutrient and the nutrient-dense foods and things like that. And yes, you're probably not going to be as full as if you ate that $5 bag of you know, of fried rice that's already been prepared for you. It's going to fill you up and all of that. And it's just way different for a lot of people. And it's a hard paradigm to shift. And I would say, yes, it is. But if you want to have the building blocks that are most likely going to give you what you need for longevity with wellness, that's one way to think.
So let's hit it then. So building blocks, we're talking nutrient dense, nutrient dense food.
Okay.
And there you go. And so nutrient dense food. So if we look at that, and my first thought was, I think what did I come up with? Four or five categories that we've got, fruits, vegetables, meats, grains. And I don't know if it's fair to put it over here, but I wanted to talk about sugar.
Desserts,
desserts and whatnot. Sweeteners. If we talk about sweets,
fun food.
In my house, we generally have, it's not 100%, but generally we have sweets are on S days. So Saturday and Sunday are when we have sweets, and we don't, again, technically
generally.
The other day. Now, you know, my older kids know, there's dad's got chocolate chips over there and they'll grab that. But honestly, the main go-to for my teen boys, in the evening when they're wanting that is frozen fruit, which I'm grateful for, like frozen mixed berries,
mm-hmm.
Which is sugar. I mean, it is. But let's hit that. Is that really better then if it's the same quantity of grams of sugar?
Sometimes.
So we'll get there. All right. So Dr. James, the first one I want to hit, and this is where the reader or listener question came from, was vegetables, because in a recent show, you talked about that and kind of scoffed at your kids, I think it was, you know, propensity to, okay, we're going to go have raw veggies, and they automatically go to, you said, carrots and
sugar snap peas.
Yeah. And I think our listener heard that and like, well, what do you mean? Come on here.
And he was like, yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah.
That's my vegetables.
Yeah.
I'm eating vegetables.
Which got me to thinking about, let's say you're at the potluck or whatever, and there's a bunch of fresh veggies that if you want to know which ones are the most nutrient dense and best for you, look at the ones that are left behind. And you said that you look at the average,
what's the last. And if people think about it and you have a veggie tray out there, what's the last one that's gone?
Yeah.
And it's almost always
broccoli and cauliflower. Yep. And for us, I'll often put in slices of raw zucchini. Yellow squash, which I really like, especially if there's some kind of dip or something like that. But yeah, people eat the, in carrots. Our carrots, jicama, is, which a lot of people don't know about, but tomatoes, you know, like little cherry tomatoes, man, kids will eat those like candy. What else would there be?
The
cucumbers.
Sugar snap peas are always on there. Carrots are always on there. Those go first. Cucumbers, I would say, are high up on the next list that kids will kind of gravitate towards. And then the next line, I would say, might be the sliced peppers. The cherry tomatoes and celery. Celery only if there's a dip.
It's the only reason celery exists.
It's fine. And then you get into the more nutrient dense and more bitter tasting, maybe, and broccoli and cauliflower. And you never see Brussels sprouts. You never see. Well, that's not fair. I mean, those need to be cooked. You know,
but asparagus.
Asparagus is
raw.
Great
asparagus. Raw.
Okra is great raw.
Oh, I don't know if I've had that raw.
So just that kind of flavor. And then, so if this guy's asking, and like you said, he was an athlete and well-to-do and thought he was doing well. And so then the question is, okay, now it's time to make the meal choices for our family. We're looking at these building blocks for myself and my kids. What vegetables are we going to apply into our kids? And
well, and to start off there, so if we're talking about you're ahead of the game if you're eating a raw vegetable, period. So kudos there.
Sure.
As opposed to chips and dip. If you're doing sugar snap peas and carrots in dip, I get better.
Yeah,
if you're doing it without dip, probably even better. But if we're going to look at vegetables as a category and not just raw, but cooked and everything, because I think your statement, just again, right off the cuff back in that show, was giving more credit to, I think, greens and some of the some of the leafy greens. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking nutrient dense, again, like construction, the nutrient dense, better building blocks are of vegetables. So top of the list down is one question. And is the other, are you just categorizing that by sugar content, because that's kind of what we alluded to with sugar snap peas and carrots.
Okay, so this is where you and I always have kind of the tough, you know, the both
gotta,
and.
I know, but
and,
you got to go with a broad brush.
That's right. So that's what I wanted to say. With a broad brush of not, because somebody's going to say, well, yeah, but what about? And we're going to say, well, yeah. So just in general, thinking about the big problems in America with sugar, too many carbs, not enough fiber, not enough nutrient-dense foods, not enough micronutrients. So in with the general theory of middle-class people who can generally afford to do these kind of things, I would say, okay, I would really put in the top tier. So let's not call it number one, number two, number three, but okay, the top tier
right.
is broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, spinach, cabbage, kale, and then the kind of the subsets of those things.
What's that, spinach what, kale?
Cabbage.
Cabbage.
And then, you know, is purple cabbage better than green cabbage? What about yellow cabbage? And then I would say colors. So I would say, yeah, purple is going to be a better choice than greens, because we generally get, if you're eating purple cabbage, you're probably the kind of person that eats, you know, what about romaine and arugula and, you know, baby this and spring that. And I said, I don't know. Right. But if you're, so in our family, that's another one of the things that we did. So, well, what do we do? And I would say we rotate. We'll get those $5 organic big tubs at Safeway of spinach, just spinach. And then we'll get the next one of spring mix. And we'll get the next one of romaine mix or something. And my favorite is the one with arugula, just a little hint of arugula in there. And those go, you know, we pull those out on almost every meal, except for, well, even with breakfast and, you know, saute those with eggs and stuff. So spinach, cabbage, kale. Is there too much of that? You know, can you overdo it? What about bok choy? What about radicchio? What about? And I would say, yeah. All of those kind of things. But in contrast to butternut lettuce and iceberg lettuce and, you know, these are the ones that people say, oh yeah, I love those. Because they tend to be sweeter. You know, they tend to be the kind of things that apply to the palate of Americans, which wants to be sweet and carby. And I'm not saying those are bad, and they're better than lacing your hamburger with sugar. So it's on the, but on the scale and the tier, I would put those kinds of greens up high, along with broccoli, cauliflower, the Brussels sprouts, the asparagus. And am I forgetting anything? Generally, that's what other kind of veg. And then you could say jicama, and you could say beets, and you could say, okay, well, let's a tier like beets and carrots. Think about these historically. They're very high in carbs. Now, beets are famous for the nitric oxide production, and you can buy all these beet powders and beet juices. And are beets just awesome? I say, yeah, beets are great, but they can tend to be overdone. Like, is there somebody out there in the world that's just eating darn too much broccoli? Just too many Brussels sprouts? Like, man, sure. You are harming yourself.
Grandmother got onto the juicing thing and whatever and carrots, and she did so much that she kind of got
orange. Oranges, yeah. And there's, we've had multiple patients in carrot. But I've never had somebody come into the office and I had to reduce their broccoli intake.
You look green. It's yeah. Well, if you think about it, I think this is bothers me a little bit when I go into the produce section and realize how little of the produce section I partake of.
There's a lot of, and culturally, like, what are some things that we just don't do? There's those cactus plants, yeah. You know, that you see over there. And
my little girl was looking at dragon fruit last night. Can we get one of those? It was like $6. I don't know, whatever. I don't even know what it is that we don't. Well, but then, so Mark Hyman, one of the biggest, most well-known functional medicine docs out there, and he is pretty infamous these days for harping on I don't know if he says specifically, you know, half, but about half, I think is kind of his rule of thumb. Half of your plate should be vegetables. And it always jumps out at me whenever I do go out to eat, and whether you go get Italian food or Mexican food or good old American, you know, burgers or even, you know, sushi and the Asian foods or whatever, of how little, if any, vegetables are on there. We're not looking to go out and spend money for a nice meal and get broccoli. It's just not part of the American culture. And he's calling us to have half. I mean, that's a big separation. So we're asking you to go home, us to go home, and give your kid, your teenage boy, a plate that is half vegetables. In American culture, that is it doesn't happen. As opposed to my daughter, 21 years old, just landed in France. She's living on a farm, and she's taking pictures of her food, and it's half vegetables right out of the garden. Very indicative of the area. I mean,
so compare your daughter to my two. So last night was high school soccer, and one of my son's friends came over for dinner, and we're doing so the my wife always makes the menu. So on the menu, you know, like all Americans, we say, you know, the theme was barbecue chicken. Right. And then it's underneath that, it's built around barbecue chicken and then broccoli. And so that's what it was, chicken and broccoli. Now, of course, we chopped up. We have some really awesome pickles and onions, and we sliced up an avocado. And so my plate, though, came around, and my son's friend raises his eyebrows, look at it, because it was half broccoli cauliflower and the other half was pulled chicken pieces topped with a whole lot of avocados and onions. And on his plate was two giant buns with a giant amount of heavily barbecued, I left the barbecue sauce off because of my keto thing, heavily barbecue sauced two things. That was it. And a little corner over here of broccoli cauliflower. And at the end of the meal, I'm like, can I eat your broccoli cauliflower? Cause I'm like, I'm not going to waste it. Wow. And so he's like, I don't like that stuff.
But that's average American protein. And now you said buns, because I was going to say, what you left out of the average, even healthy meal is a carb. We think we have to have a grain. And often, even in my house, we would have had rice with that. We would have had some brown rice.
Yeah, us too. And it was the bun on that night that I can leave off, but there's always, and Marcy and I, we go round and round to say, well, my son will not fill up half his plate with broccoli. He just won't do that. He will not get full. So then do I succumb and say, we'll just be hungry? Or do we provide corn chips and rice and these other things? And of course we do.
Which, and your son, my son, can also do that, chicken and buns and whatever, and go out and kick butt in the soccer game. And they're performing well.
We're right back to your Sean Petty guy.
Yeah, they're getting good grades at school. And you're like, okay, what is it?
What's the problem?
So are we saying we're trying to invest in who they are when they're 80? I would say, yeah.
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 We're planting seeds. We're trying to water those.
Their brain development.
But I feel like, and my wife would roll her eyes at me, and I'd say, I read the books that I read. Mm-hmm. I treat the patients over here at 30, 40, 50, and I'm watching my kids do it. And I look back at myself, and I did do it. And the tension that's in there is part of why we're doing the show, because a lot of people are out there and they're like, yeah, me too. And so what's the answer? And of course the answer is you can't come, you know, and you know, be Naziistic and no soup for you about it with your 15-year-old son who's going to roll his eyeballs at you. And, you know, we laugh at it there too. And so Ryder and I, we do laugh. And
Go back to planting seeds though, because, you know, so I've got the little kids, and to some degree they're going to eat what I tell them to, but they're pretty great. Mine are with doing the veggies. I've got teen boys who want to eat what tastes good. And if they can just eat the chicken and the buns, they're going to do that. Now, I do have the benefit too, though, of older kids. I've got four over the age of 20 now who eat great. I mean,
testify to those teenagers of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, giving our kids some grace for that season of where they're in, led maybe more so led by their taste buds, less mature to pick a healthier option. They're not even buying their own food. You know, that changes things as well. So to have some grace there, but it does bode or it's convicting to say we are planting seeds without the knowledge at least. So my boys, like yours, even though they're saying, oh, come on, I want the bun and the chicken. I don't want all the veggies, but they know.
They know, yeah.
That's powerful. At least they know. Go for it. So veggies, that was veggies. Let's do the same thing with...
Well, let's, on the veggies, on the tier two, the downside, oh. You know, so peas, corn, and carrots. Okay. Like the staple of America. I grew up on mixed vegetables. Did you have those? The frozen bird's eye, mixed vegetables, mixed vegetables. And peas, corn, and carrots, and, you know, Ferris Bueller. Tom Hanks was the...
Big?
No, the one where he was... Box Forrest? Of chocolate. Forrest Gump.
Peas and carrots. Yeah, yeah, man.
It's just in us, and I like them too, but I would put them a tier down and say, okay, yeah, they're better than a Snicker bar, but if you're aiming at nutrient dense, they just can't do it.
I know. Peas and corn, we don't do. We literally don't. And I think of them as a carb. I put them in.
Oh, and they are.
Like potatoes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I just read a book, and that was the vegetarian came in, and they didn't have anything but potatoes. That's not a vegetable. Is it technically a vegetable?
It's a vegetable.
Is it?
It's a root. But that's where we're going to go next, is carrots are root vegetables, beets are root vegetables, potatoes are root vegetable. Technically, you could go over, are legumes their own thing? Are they part of the vegetables? And they're part of the vegetables. So, you know, they're not roots. But they're high in carbs. That's not wrong. That's not bad. And if you go back to 1800s and in Ireland, potatoes kept people alive, right? Because they are carbohydrate dense.
Okay, I'm going to go to my building thing. They kept people alive, like a homeless guy with a cardboard box.
Yeah, it keeps him alive.
Yep, kept a little bit of the snow.
Sola Snickers bar, Sola Hot Pocket. And that's when we say, if you're coming out of the desert, you're going to starve to death. You're on a ship out in the ocean for 3 months. And you've got
God bless potatoes
and Hot Pockets, and we'll be grateful for that in that kind of situation. If it's your birthday, have some cake. Yes. But like you call S days, and we say, I habitually say Monday through Friday. If Monday through Friday, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you are aiming at nutrient dense pretty good, and you have some celebration days, sweet days on the weekends that don't go crazy, I think that's a general... pretty good place to be. Like the guy who wrote in, sorry, whoever that was, I didn't write him back, but here's how I would answer it, is to say, yeah, man, okay, we do have corn. We have like 3 times a year, the sweet corn on the cob, when it comes in, and it reminds me of my childhood because, you know, you get to pick your meal on your birthday, and I would have fried chicken, corn on the cob.
Good Southern boy.
Yes. With fried okra with that too. And, okra actually goes in tier two. Okra is high in carbs. It's hard to get. It's more expensive. It's kind of a treat. We've been doing, my words. In New Orleans, you get the soup that's called...
Oh, jambalaya.
Yeah. Gumbo. So we've been making that with a lot of celery and lots of okra. And all the kids pick theirs out and give it to me. So, but that tier two kind of thing tends to be the carbohydrate-y things. Historically, your root vegetables, what's the old name for a cellar? They called it a root cellar.
Oh, right.
Why?
Because those will last.
February and March when you are hungry.
Well, I'm thinking of watching Poldark, the TV thing, and they're eating their potatoes, they're eating potatoes, and they got scurvy. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, scurvy because they're not getting
doctor came by
nutrients. So it's a life... survival sustaining
but
food.
Here's the problem. People these days will say, well, I'm not getting scurvy, right? Like these days there's enough government demanded input into your processed
these
foods.
Lucky Charms fortified with 8 essential
That's
vitamins
right.
and iron.
You won't get scurvy or rickets or beriberi or kwashiorkor,
but you're not going to be lively and vibrant at 60 probably
or 20
right.
And that, and then we're back to show number one. What is true life? What is lively and vibrant? Yes, own it. Be in control. Don't foist off your ownership, your freedom, your free agent responsibility of your own building blocks of yourself to the government who's going to fortify your food for you. We are now several generations into that. Well, they wouldn't sell it if it wasn't good for us or if it wasn't safe. right? If they sell it, so it must be safe. The FDA approves it.
The FDA approves it. It means it won't kill you immediately.
We're so broken. Yeah. If we were morally, intellectually consistent, we would control sugar. Like we control alcohol and tobacco and
well, when I came in here, you were reading, it's right there, Dan Buettner's Blue Zones, and that's the Blue Zone Solution. He has a few different books, but the Blue Zone Solution, I mean, you can go in there and he goes through the healthiest places in the world, not just longevity, not just lifespan, but also health span. So their ability, and literally looks and talks about what they eat in these different environments. Great book to go read and go look what they're eating and pick your own. And they do have grains. They do have some of these.
Some of the, I was just looking at the Greek island of wherever that was, and potatoes were high up on the list. And that's where I'd say, okay, but what kind of potatoes? Because, gosh, in America, it's not that God messed up when he made potatoes, but we have hybridized and we've mechanized the process so much so that we, the only kind of corn produced is sweet corn. The only kind of potatoes are these giant russet potatoes that, compared to like the animals, where like chickens have these giant breasts that never happened in the past. And it so in the name of, again, increasing production per dollar and making it cheaper, we're losing the nutrient value of those things, in contrast to those weird looking itty bitty gnarly, you know, bent purple and red potatoes and those kind of things.
And same thing with corn. Yeah, to the point of, I don't know if this is totally fair, but I think of the corn on the cob, like the sweet corn on the cob, it's like a Hot Pocket. It's a treat.
Yeah.
I think of that. It's carby, sugary. Yeah. You put butter,
celebration.
Butter and salt on it.
It's a July the 4th celebration. And that's how that food should be. But what was it born out of back in the day, you know, way back 1700 in the famous corn stories or whatever? Back then, do you even know what Indian corn is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever seen it in the last 10, 15 years?
Yeah, they use it as decorations these days.
It's plastic.
Fall decorations, yeah.
But you can't buy it to eat.
Uh-uh.
And so it's gone. We've hybridized it out. Have you heard of heirloom grains?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you anything.
Because now that they've hybridized and, you know, to help people from starving to death, this is true. It saved a million people to get, you know, winter wheat and those kind of things and have shortened the growing cycle and that kind of thing. But at what cost? And
well, again,
so now
we're talking,
we don't have the old.
We're talking survival or thriving. So our focus here is, so we have a culture built mainly around food and FDA approval on survival. That's how it got built. And we're talking about, okay, you could do that if you want to thrive, if you want to give yourself the best chance,
right,
like we talked big began with, to not get sick, like I'm sick, right? But, you know, but bigger beyond that, disease, and, you know, as we look towards people's fear of dementia and ability later in life. And I say that, but man, I'm just as concerned right here today with having a good conversation, being clear of mind, clarity of thinking, being creative. As soon as I, you know, stop this, I'm talking with my web lady about a new thing that we're launching and stuff. And for me to be at the top, can I perform well on Hot Pockets? Maybe so. Maybe I can be an exception. Mm-hmm. I'm going to veer towards the best possibility.
Back to risk management.
Yeah.
Probability.
Yeah.
So we're not saying you're guaranteed to not get sick, but risk management, brain management, joint management, skin management, body management. Give your body a chance. Okay, so that was tier two of the veggies. Yeah. If that veers over into legumes and things, then I would say yes, but be careful. Like right now, and going through this, we talked last time about a ketogenic whatever, and those things aren't on that. And I would say it doesn't mean if I'm going to say ketosis and ketogenic, it's not going to mean that this is for everybody all the time and everybody in every situation. In fact, I would say we all ought to be dipping into ketosis sometimes and coming out sometimes. And so our legumes, we're not going to label things good or bad. We're going to say, hey, if you're an American and you're managing your risk, a lot of people are going to be on the too high carbohydrate side. But let's say somebody doesn't do potatoes very often, doesn't do rice very often, doesn't do corn very often. Well, then have more lentils. Okay. You know, have steel cut oats. You know, okay.
Yeah.
So beans are great. It's a great health food.
Maybe.
And that's right. Maybe.
It's not for me. We did the test, and you
can't do them.
And I can't. So I have. But if you take again back to your thing of who have you found that has a sensitivity against broccoli?
It's pretty rare.
I haven't found one yet. Maybe it's out there. Yeah. And now when we have something over here like nightshades, like
the
corn,
famous ones,
like
dairy, gluten, all the corn and soy. Yes. Yeah. And legumes are high.
I'm going to put legumes in there that you're getting into foods that have a higher propensity for a sensitivity, intolerance, allergy, whatever. I'd say be wary of them. And we do have some of the docs who are poking against some of the certain foods like lentils, like kale, even because of the higher lectins,
oxalates, and things like that. Now, I would poke back and say, yes, if you're talking to a largely processed food population.
Okay.
But let's go to that Crete island. And these guys have grown up for generations with, you know, I would imagine kids there have never had fast food. Uh-huh. Unless they travel. So if you go up from, you know, 0 to 18 and there's essentially no exposure to a typical fast food or whatever, there's just no processed food. Like those people having a problem with lectins and oxalates and legumes, I'm going to say it's dramatically lower risk there.
Oh,
because allergy is born out of the imbalance of the overindulgence of dairy, gluten, corn, soy in a processed form.
Okay, I want to hit on processed though, because there's an interesting thing there. If we're sitting here talking about vegetables, and the ones that you put at the top of the list, tier one, folks, you know, again, broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, spinach, cabbage, kale. Brussels sprouts is a little difficult, but all those you can eat. You can pick and eat. So you almost put at the top of the list some of the ones there. And as you get down into tier two, tier three, you get into the ones that have to be prepared, not processed. But you don't go eat a raw potato. You don't eat raw beans. If we're talking about lentils, I mean, it'd break your teeth. You can't go eat beans. And what beans do we eat? I don't know how they're prepared, but if you're getting it out of a can, which is the primary way a bean is done, as opposed to getting raw beans, you know, with hard beans that you have to, most people are used to soaking them overnight. If you do that
in
the morning,
but
think about that. You soak them overnight. At the morning, you got this gunk at the top of the water. And if you pour that off, I'm told that that helps with getting rid of some of the lectins, some of the junk. Now you boil them and get rid of, we pour off all that stuff as well. And you get what I think is the most natural, unadulterated bean without all the stuff that, I mean, even if you read some of the health books, they'll talk about if you are going to get them canned, dump the crap off of them. Don't dump them in the thing and just eat them right there. Dump the crap off of them, rinse them, get that stuff off. You'll get less gas. Well, that should be a telltale issue right there. So is that fair to look at the more preparation? You may be looking at more propensity, possibility of some issues, intolerances.
Yes, that. And now, especially because in the processing, we have other people prepare them for us. Nobody wants to soak their beans overnight and that kind of thing. So it's easier to do a can. I'll go one layer further and say historically, what was the processing? One area that we don't talk too much about was all of these ancient people's fermentation. Oh. Right? So fermented beans, natto, is the...
In America, that doesn't exist.
Right.
Fermented, if we think of anything, we think of sauerkraut and yogurt.
And that's about it.
And I'm going to pick on that one real quick because my little girl wanted yogurt. We don't do dairy with her, so we're looking at non-dairy yogurt. At the one grocery store, City Market over here we were at, I could not find a plain version. I could find was flavored. None of them had less than like 12, 15 grams of sugar per serving. I said, honey, it's like ice cream. We're not getting it. So
we did. And you got it. And we have a family that likes yogurt, and oftentimes we'll do goat yogurt. You have to get it from the health food store, and you still have to look for the one that's plain.
Yeah, because you can look at the same brand of super healthy, and the plain has 4 grams of sugar. The vanilla or strawberry has 15.
I was going to say the plain had more than I thought. With me doing this keto thing, and yesterday I had this goat yogurt, and I thought, oh, well, And it, of course, it doesn't taste sweet at all, but the lactose is in there, mm-hmm. right? It's the sugar. And it was surprising. And Americans, it's like my kid, can I have yogurt? Yes, but don't put any sweetener in it. And they're like, ah, oh, never mind. You know, they just won't do it.
I was out of town somewhere a while ago. And where would I have been where they had this big wine mart or something like that? And I went in and I said, I want an apple cider, like a hard apple cider or something. But can you give me where's the least sweet ones? He actually took me to a different area. The guy had an English accent, so he didn't sound native. And he says, yeah, here in America, people like sweet. So all these over here, all these regular ciders that people are going to go to, they are. But if you really want, I've got some international ones over here that have less. And we went over there and I got one from, I can't remember where, some other country that had hardly any sugar in it. But it was just a great telltale thing. Here's this guy and he just knows. He works at the big wine market. Americans, you know, it's a joke. They want the sugar.
Yep.
Just again, for us to keep hearing, this is the culture that we live in. It's not evil, not a conspiracy, but regardless.
That's right. So when people say, well, beans are good or a health food, and I would say, well, yeah. Historically, those also last until February, March when, you know, food is low. By then, oftentimes in the way they were stored, they were sour. It was fermented. And that was a natural, normal kind of a thing. And people learned. It's back then, I don't know if you had a thought of I like it or I dislike it. It's just this is how we don't die. This is what we eat. Hundreds, if not thousands of years of that habit. And in the last 100 years, it's just been such a dramatic change. Your doctor who said, you know, the way we live now is so extreme. Oh. And so let's get back to our vegetables there. We veered off into legumes to say, yeah, but there's a way to do them that's better, probably the dried and soaked, pour off the top. You do them in the crock pot kind of a thing. And like I would never look at somebody and say, oh gosh, that's too many carbohydrates. Right now, if that person is saying, I cannot lose weight, I'd say, well, those are carbohydrates.
Yeah.
You've got to, if you've never given your body the opportunity of 90 days in ketosis, then those will keep you out of ketosis most likely. It's not right or wrong. It's just now what's your goals on the other side of that. And some people, and I think more percentage-wise in America, we need to do a show on this, are going to be on the exquisitely sensitive insulin side. So in the past, I've talked about insulin resistance. Anyway, so that'll be a future show. Okay, what's our next food?
No, actually, we're gone too long. We're just going to make it part two. We'll go. We got
holy cow. I thought we were 5 minutes into this.
We're 53 minutes.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Literally 53 minutes talking about vegetables. No, so I would say if there's anything you want to round out, this is going to be a show on vegetables, which again, I'll try to put this in the show notes, but we're saying best case scenario. Again, this is not a judgment or right, wrong, or whatever, but if you are looking at the highest propensity for your vibrancy, capacity, capability now and in the future, Dr. Randy James, we've got broccoli. It's half of your meals. Broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, spinach, cabbage, purple, even better. Kale. I'm sure there's some others on there. I mean, look in those, even where those exist in the produce aisle, there's other ones that are
right not next to mainstream. Kale is the Swiss chard. Like, when was the last time you had Swiss chard? You know, it's like, well, and why not? I don't know.
We're creatures of habit. So tier two, then you're putting the peas and corn, which I'll say in my family, we literally
no. Don't. Well, tier two, I would say the root veggies, beets, carrots, turnips, potatoes are off on their own over there. But in terms of, you know, good veggies down that pathway, yes, enjoy them, but maybe less often. And then almost not a vegetable. I mean, technically they're not a vegetable. It's peas and carrots.
Yeah.
I mean, peas and corn.
Corn, peas, corn.
Those are carb fruit.
Potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In America, I just say, like you said, if you just want to draw a line and you're just going to say, hey, let's don't just only have potatoes on celebration.
Yeah.
Like for us, every other weekend or so is hamburger movie night and french fries.
Again, best case scenario. If you can get your kid who doesn't eat vegetables, eating some peas, great.
Yeah.
Do what you can. We're talking about best case scenario on that. Did you do a tier three?
And then we didn't have a tier three. I don't think in the vegetable category, there's not going to be something that we say avoid. I said that with peas and carrots and potatoes. It's like, you're going to get those things coming into your diet somehow anyway. Yeah. Just to have those on your menu, like, hey, we're going to have a meal built around this. We do potatoes sometimes, but we go to the health food store and we try to find the gnarliest, purplest potatoes.
Yeah.
And have fun here, with
it. Let me throw this in, because you talked about, we joked about celery. The only reason you have celery is if you got a dip, which is the case for me. But on that, again, as we're talking about, we could do the best case scenario and that you've got half your plate of raw, the best veggies, maybe. But my gosh, especially when you talk about your family or yourself or your kids, if the only way you can get them to eat broccoli is with some ranch dressing, as opposed to the Hot Pocket, I'd say go for it.
Or nothing, then find your best ranch.
Make your own. Yeah, make your own. Find your least offensive, least processed option. I did. I got, it's actually in the fridge here. I wanted some. I got a big thing of a variety of, I was just in a hurry, and it was fresh veggies. So broccoli, cauliflower, peppers, carrots were probably in there, and it was a raw. It was at Safeway. So I bought that. And then I got some dip, and they had, the health food section, but it was like a ranch or something like that dressing dip that had five ingredients, as opposed to the one over on the dressing aisle that had 20, most that I couldn't pronounce. And so I did do that. Now, would I be better to have it without dressing? Sure. But if my little girl is more prone to eat her raw broccoli by dipping it in, okay.
I don't know. I think that depending upon what's in that, in the past, dressing, it went south. It became weird and chemicalized and all that. And I've been influenced by this ketogenic mindset, but now I load up my veggies with fat, oil.
Yeah.
Oil and vinegar. That's a dressing. That's a dip.
Well, we're old enough with the old Schoolhouse Rock on Saturday mornings, and they had one. It was it had a little melody, don't drown your food. And it was showing the potato with all the junk on it.
Right, because it was ketchup or whatever that is 90% sugar.
Because back then we came from a time when we actually did eat raw and plain veggies, and now we're drowning our food. Of course, now we've just done away with vegetables altogether.
Yeah.
That's great. So if you're going to go back to drowning your vegetables, knock yourself out to some degree. I mean, again, better than none.
Other alternatives, right?
Yeah. Well, I hope that did justice on.
I think it
veggies.
And the fact that the time went by so fast is
tells you how much there is, how much complexity, how much discussion, conversation around food.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah, if you want the nutrient dense stuff to build a strong, long lasting house, well, there you go. Friends, thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Again, that's Dr. Randy James, medical doctor, functional medicine expert, one of my dearest friends on the planet. I actually call him my best friend. He just is. And you can find out about him. And like Kathy, who I told you about in the intro, if you want to work with him to get to the root issues of what you're dealing with health-wise, check him out. TrueLifeMedicine.com. He's got people from all over the country flying in to see him, at least for the initial visit. Then he can do the rest remotely for the most part. And again, if you've got questions on your health and on the things we talk about, email me directly, kevin@kevinmiller.co. I'd be honored to talk with you. Hey, until next time, I hope this episode helps you drive further and enjoy the ride and enjoy your veggies. Thanks so much for joining me on this journey. I look forward to meeting you in the Drive Tribe community for ongoing discussions about each episode. You can subscribe to the Drive Drop newsletter for weekly updates. Find it all at kevinmiller.co, along with all our social media and video clips. Until next time, I hope this episode helps you drive further and enjoy the ride.